Hello, everyone. Stitcher Premium is having a special sale for Labor Day. For the first few days, you can get 3 months of premium for just a dollar. That'll get you fan-favorite premium-only shows like Big Grand's Teacher's Lounge and The Mysterious Secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium. Just go to stitcherpremium.com/Labor Day and get 3 months for only a dollar! Hey guys, I'm here to talk to you about a cool new podcast called Throwing Shade with Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi. They talk about issues important to women in the LGBT community, but they treat the issues with way less respect than they deserve because that's funny and stuff. And what's really cool is for every 100,000 listens they get, they will throw an ounce and a half of actual shade in the form of potting soil in the eyes of Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. So if you want people to throw dirt at a senator's face, listen to Throwing Shade with Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi, and they will throw literal shade at Ted Cruz. Anyway, new episodes every Thursday. They got people like Paul F. Tompkins on. It's super funny. It's cool as heck, yo. Listen in!
The safety briefs beforehand. Always stress to always check your bearings, because if you get essentially hopelessly lost in the woods, it would be very difficult to find you, and it was not unheard of for trainees, recruits, or whatever, to die. And so that's essentially what he had threatened me with.
Hey there, Brandon Johnson here. On this week's Cracked Gets Personal, we're talking to women warriors. Our sources today are all ladies who serve this fair to Midland country all around the world. Like all our soldiers, they're patriotic and brave. And like all women, they have to deal with way more bullshit than their male counterparts for like no reason. With me, as always, is Robert Evans, head of the Cracked Personal Experience article team. Robert, who are we talking to this week?
Okay, so on today's episode of the podcast, we are going to learn about value of compassion on a battlefield, why you sometimes need to break a coworker's jaw in order to get things done, and how the military fell behind Burning Man in urination technology. But first, we're going to talk with Aaron, pseudonym, who is a soldier in the Army from June of 2007 until October 2009, and then served in the Marine Corps from January 2010 until January 2015. Like roughly 25% of service women, she was sexually assaulted during her time serving our country.
I went to the Army when I was 17 years old. I was essentially the youngest person in my platoon. I was also extremely small. I'm like 5'3". And back in the day, I was like 100 pounds soaking wet. So about a couple weeks into my being in basic training, I was on fire watch, you know, just standing in the hallway, making sure nothing caught fire and nothing crazy happened. And I was approached by a drill sergeant from a different platoon in the same company. And essentially, he told me that I had a phone call. And so I felt that if I was being approached in such a way, because there's that level of trust there, right, between an instructor and a student. So I followed him because I had assumed if he says I have a phone call, then I have a phone call. And if I have a phone call, it's probably an emergency. And so I followed him. And he had grabbed me and he had tried to kiss me. And essentially, he had told me I was, you know, brought down there to sleep with him, essentially. And he said that it would be a shame if I were to lose rank so early on in boot camp. Luckily for me, my father, career military, my entire family, career military, all that stuff. I know you can't lose rank for that thing. It's like, what are you going to say during my trial that I wouldn't have sex with you so I'm losing rank? Like, what? But it made no sense. And I said as such, that makes no sense, no. But then, you know, it moved instead of that type of threat to essentially threatening my life. I was training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And if I remember correctly, one of the largest land navigation courses in the Army.
For a moment, could you just quickly explain for our listeners what land navigation is? I mean, you were basically going out in the woods and trying to find your way around.
Yeah, so the whole point is to go out and find, yeah, these waypoints in the woods. Normally, you know, you don't go by yourself or anything. It's usually part of a group, but, you know, people get separated. And there's always the safety briefs beforehand. Always stress to always check your bearings, always check that you have the correct direction, correct azimuth, everything. Because if you get essentially hopelessly lost in the woods, that it would be very difficult to find you. And it was not unheard of for trainees, recruits, or whatever, to die in the woods of like starvation or dehydration before people are able to find them. And so that's essentially what he had threatened me with. He had told me that he would ensure that I got lost in the woods and it would be written off as a training accident.
You viewed it as a credible threat.
Yeah, it was a pretty distressing thing to hear, especially because I personally, I'm not good at land navigation. And so, as a result, non-consensual intercourse ensued. It happened pretty regularly over the course of my training period because no one really questioned if they heard weird noises or anything like that, because it was actually not unusual for some of the drill sergeants to bring like a girlfriend or something like that over. Mind you, this was back in 2007. I don't think they're allowed to do that anymore, but it was a little bit less well-monitored back then.
So I guess let's kick it off with some statistics here. At least 25% of U.S. military women have been sexually assaulted, and up to 80% have been sexually harassed. A 2012 Pentagon survey found that approximately 26,000 women and men were sexually assaulted. Of those, only 3,374 cases were reported. And Aaron's case is one of the unreported ones.
Wow. I wish that it was seen as treason.
Because yeah, right?
It seems like if you go after a police officer, it's a special set of charges. And it would seem like if you do intermilitary sexual assault, it should be something that you've done against a federal piece of property, basically, is that you've attacked something that the country holds very dear.
Yeah, and you've also decreased the country's military readiness and defensive capability, because like that impacts the Army's ability to function as an army if everybody's afraid of sexual assault. Like, that can't make you better fighters.
Right. Puts yeah. the asshole in low morale.
There's a couple of things that strike me about her story. One of them is how practiced this is. Like, when you hear a guy who has it set up like that, who has an A and a B plan, like A plan, threatened to bust your rank, B plan, threatened to get you killed in land nav, that's a guy who's done it before.
Yeah.
And the majority of sexual assaulters, of rapists, I guess would be the right term to use, don't just stop at one.
Also, we know that creeps tend to go into professions where they can be creeps.
Yeah.
You know, and if we have this issue going on, not if, but since we have this issue going on, it'd be nice to root them out.
Yeah, and you hear about this. I know the S-Town podcast starts with the story of a police officer in that county in Georgia who was pulling women over and sexually assaulting them and basically, like, holding them until they would perform sexual favors. Like, it seems like jobs like this, like drill instructor, like police officer, where there's this amount of power and prestige, but also, like, you have to be trusted alone with people.
Right.
That's just, like, a magnet for this kind of person.
And I do believe that there's a type of woman that goes into these environments and steals herself for what may happen, but we don't think that this is going to happen because you're supposed to be in the safest place.
Yeah, like you would think that of all the things to worry about in boot camp, rape shouldn't be one of them.
Right, that, fellow rape.
Yeah, there's supposed to be, you don't have any privacy in the military, so it shouldn't be possible for something like that to happen. Like, because everybody's always watching, you've always got cameras and drill instructors on you, but it amazes me that she stayed in the military for most of a decade after this point.
That's the thing about oppressed peoples, is they tend to be very resilient, because if you didn't engage, how would you even buy groceries? So there's always this thing of how do you keep going? And it's that you honestly don't have a choice. I wonder if those numbers match up on the street as well. Like, is there 25% on the street just like there's 25% in the military?
Like, I don't think the military is a lot higher than the general population. Yeah, according to a March 2013 report from the U.S. Department of Justice's Bureau of Justice Statistics, one out of every six American women has been the victim of attempted or completed rape in her lifetime. So it's a little bit higher, it sounds like, for the military, if they're at as much as a quarter.
Which would make sense, because these guys are in packs. It seems like there's more men than women.
Yeah, definitely a lot more men than women. And also, I mean, it is worth noting that the majority of rapes that occur in the military are men who get raped, because the majority of people in the military are men. Like, there's a lot of male soldiers who get sexually assaulted as well.
Probably also appeals to the other parts of being a predator.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're the kind of person who likes power and domination, which I think rape, those seem to be big aspects of rape, like, then obviously you're going to want to, like, weapons training and learning how to fight. Like, that's great. Which is not to say, I mean, everybody, like, it's fun to learn how to fight. Like, it's fun to learn how to
be. But if you're particularly interested in pins.
Yeah, yeah. Then.
Then we might look at you a little differently.
Like, you talk to people who have been infantry NCOs and whatnot, and most of them will have stories about choking their fellows out because, like, someone, like, insulted them or, like, made a snide comment or something, and, like, that's an important part of keeping discipline. It's like, oh, I gotta choke him out. Like, he talked smack to me, and, like, he's underneath me in this unit, and, like, that's part of keeping unit cohesion is, like, that sort of physical dominance. I think one thing we forget when we talk about the military is she was 17. These are, like, teenagers, a lot of them. And teenagers are full of hormones, and there's going to be a lot of, like, weird touching and groping, and even if it's an all-male unit, it gets weird when you stick a bunch of teenagers alone in the woods or the desert.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they're painting portraits with their dicks.
Yeah. One game you'll hear about a lot is Gay Chicken, which is not an uncommon. Like, it's just, like, to see how uncomfortable you can make someone else. Because you're all standing up on watch all night or whatever, so you see who can go the furthest before the other person, like, freaks out. Because it's like, they're teenagers. Like,
I love that they would ban homosexuals from the military, but also play a game called, this isn't a real blowjob. This is just to see how uncomfortable I can make you.
Yeah, I mean, because it's the same as high school. I think one of the things Hollywood has done that's, like, made probably unfair for, like, servicemen and women is that they always cast 35-year-olds who are the muscle density of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. When most of the people fighting our wars are like 18, 19, 20, they are kids.
Right.
They're not that far from high school. And they're no more, they're better, they're really well trained, obviously. Like, they're good at fighting. Like, there's no question about that. But they're also, like, they're not any more mature than the people you were a freshman with in college.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're forced to police themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. And so I think that kind of context is important when we think about this, because it's she's not going into this situation as an adult, a full adult woman who understands her rights and understands how to stand up for herself, because she's 17 years old.
Right.
And I think it's probably time to roll on to, like, the question that I think is inspired in most people's minds when you hear a story like that is, was some fucking justice ever done? And spoiler alert, no.
Fast forward a couple of weeks when we started getting our death by PowerPoint classes about sexual assault. And that's when they started laying out the SHARP program, the Sexual Harassment and Assault Response Program, I believe is what that acronym is for. And it was essentially them describing the process of what to do if you are sexually assaulted or you feel you are being sexually harassed. And so I remember sitting there and thinking, you know, that's the thing I need to do. But unfortunately, the way that basic training works, if I were to report what this drill sergeant had done, I would be stuck in this weird limbo, a legal hold. I'd be taken out of training. I would have to wait for an investigation to be conducted. I would have to wait for the results of that investigation. And then I would have to wait through whatever trial would come of it. And then after all of that is said and done, which I know that sexual assault cases and stuff like that, even if they do go to trial or anything, the investigation alone can take a year. So that would have to go on. And then once everything was done with that, I would have to wait until a platoon was available for me to drop into to complete my training. And so, yeah, I'd be looking at probably around a year of sitting in Fort Leonard Wood, not technically a soldier, and just waiting to complete training until all of this was done.
I think it's important to note in the real world outside of the military, out of 1,000 rapists, any group of 1,000 rapists, about 100 are reported for their crimes, about 30 will face trial, and about 10 are jailed.
This is 2%?
Yeah, something like that. So when she says it's probably not worth it, she's right on a purely practical standpoint that if she reports this, the year or so delay in starting her career and, like, moving on with her life, just on an ugly pragmatic level, weighing that against, like, the actual odds that any justice is done, you have to see her point.
That was not what I signed up for. And so I made the conscious decision to wait until after I completed basic training so that I could move on to complete my other training so that I could be in the Army to report it. Unfortunately, that process did not go very well for me. again, this is 2007, where, yeah, I sat down with a unit victim advocate at my follow-on school. And, you know, it was a male staff sergeant. And he kind of looked at me after I told him what had happened and essentially had said, just like, why would a drill sergeant fuck a private? It would mess with his career. Why would he risk his career to fuck a private, were the words that he said. And that was after him questioning me for almost an hour of every little detail that he could. And then, you know, proceeding to ask, well, why'd you wait? And so essentially my story was completely discredited in his eyes because I did not report immediately. And two, it seems awful to say that fear of false reports, that false fear that a lot of people have of false reports, it's like he had the instinct to protect this other man's career. So yeah, that made it pretty difficult for me to follow on with anything. And, you know, I haven't ever followed up on it ever since. I just go to therapy.
I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any recourse, or at least at that point in time, that there was any recourse for someone in your position, whether they were a woman or a man. Like, if I guess you could have gone to the police.
Yeah, unfortunately, looking back, he didn't see me as a credible person. I was 17 years old, just out of basic training. But this guy over here was a staff sergeant and a combat veteran. And so at that point, you know, he was weighing essentially our face value, and mine did not measure up.
That's effed up, because you know what we do with people who suffer sexual assault? We make them build the case. Whereas if you get shot, all you got to do is go to court and be like, that's the dude that shot me. You don't actually have to talk about when he purchased the gun, what he may have been thinking. We make these people actually go out and build us a case about their assault. That's exactly what that dude did.
Yeah, there's so much worry about, like, well, what if it's a false report? Like,
right.
A woman could just, I mean, the statistics, and by the way, if you want to check this up, the statistics I'm getting mostly come from the Bureau of Justice's National Crime Victimization Survey. This is from a Washington Post article titled "The Truth About a Viral Graphic on Rape Statistics." Of any group of 1,000 rapists, roughly 2 are falsely accused. That's the rate of liars that we're looking at among claimed rape victims.
The other thing, too, is, you know, if you're a juvenile, your records get sealed. So you go out, you shoplift, and then you have a good life, so your records get sealed. Nobody ever finds out that you were once a little thug. But if you're a rape victim, that's going to follow her throughout her military career.
Mm-hmm.
There is no sealed record for your victimization, and that puts her in peril again.
Yeah, everyone's going to know if you report it. And so everybody's going to, like, well, this is the thing I think women who are raped deal with, no matter, like, what sort of organization they're employed by or whatever, like, a lot of people are going to doubt it. They're going to be, especially if they know the guy who's being accused, and like, well, no, he always seemed nice to me. He wouldn't do that. Like she said, this guy's a decorated combat veteran, you know?
People should probably get it through their heads that the guy who looks like he wouldn't do is no different than the guy who looks like he would do.
Yeah, rapists don't look like rapists.
Right.
Like, Steve Buscemi looks, well, that's not a fair thing to say, but he looks shady as hell, but he's a really nice guy. He's a firefighter. Like, it's not fair to judge.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry, Steve Buscemi. That was
he knows. He makes big money off that.
It's worked out for him.
Right. If you look like a dude who could play a gangster in the 30s, you're going to work really hard to get your public image up and nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does look just like, if you're casting the music video for the song Aqualung.
He also looks like the dude who turns Madonna down after she sings her heart out. So he looks creepy, but he's a great dude. We all know this.
Whereas actual rapists can look like Prince Charming, who was probably, I mean, was kind of a rapist. Wasn't Prince Charming kissing that sleeping girl?
Yeah,
that,
he found her asleep
and
still did the thing that he wanted to do.
Well, there you go.
Right.
There you go.
He didn't say, oh, are you okay? Somebody handed you a poison apple. He was like, I think I'll take advantage of this roofie apple.
Mm-hmm. We need a new stereotype for rapists. It needs to be handsome, square-jawed.
Right.
Yeah. Heroes. Oh, man, that would actually make things a lot more difficult for the Los Angeles Fire Department. Those guys are gorgeous. I think we're getting into a lot of trouble here.
Yeah, we're about to marry some firefighters.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll cut that out.
Yeah. So the military is obviously like a pretty conservative, old-fashioned place, and some of that is just by necessity. Like, you don't want too much experimentation in your fighting force. And they've modernized well with a lot of stuff. Like they were they integrated before the rest of American society did, which is, you know, big plus. But they've been the boys club of all boys clubs for a while. And our next source, Jane, can help explain sort of what it's like to be a woman in that boys club a little bit better.
Okay, well, I am a sergeant in the Marine Corps. I've been in just under 5 years. I'll be getting out in a couple months. I've been in Japan, and I've been stationed at an Air Force base in Texas, and that's pretty much the extent of where I've been. I have talked to a lot of Marines about it, and as far as the integration goes, they kind of just see it as an experiment that's going to end eventually. They've been sending female Marines through the infantry school for a few years now, because I know one of the women that went through it a few years ago, she was going through when you would go to the school just to see if you could finish, and then once you got out, they were like, okay, thanks for participating now. Here's your real job. And she was really, you know, proud of her accomplishments there. And in my unit, I can't speak for every unit. I can just speak for mine. It seemed like a pretty typical, you know, unit, but all the guys just gave her total props for it. Like, I didn't have one of those, you know, backwoods, girl-hating club kind of units. My unit gave her props all the time because she was shorter than most guys. But she actually got some guy was coming up to her and saying, no, you don't look like you can finish it. You don't look so tough. And, you know, they were drinking. So she said, you don't think I'm tough? And he said, no, punch me in the face. So for whatever reason, she punched him in the face and she broke his jaw. He had to wear his mouth wired shut for like 6 weeks. He lost like 30 pounds. So after that, she was pretty much, you know, nobody fucked with her. But there's always going to be those guys that think, okay, you just got through because, you know, they let you go through. But no, I mean, she totally earned it. And as far as everybody who worked with her on a daily basis, you know, she had all the respect that, you know, she earned there. But as far as the Marine Corps as a whole, I think that it's mostly seen as kind of a joke and an experiment that's going to go away before long.
Yeah, man, I grew up with sisters. I'm not letting a woman just open, punch me in my face. I know what could happen.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
I was probably going to be a brain surgeon. Now I'm a comedian because some girls wailed on me and it was head blows.
Yeah, just knocked that IQ down a few steps.
Yeah.
It's interesting that like that idea that it's like seen as an experiment, like we're seeing if this can work and it's an experiment that's going to end. Like that's such an awkward position to be in because it's already like tough to be a soldier. Like it's tough to go through all like Marine Corps training is the hardest of the basic trainings to go through. That's a tough job to take on. And then taking that on and knowing like I'm like part of an experimental group and nobody considers a male Marine representative of anything but himself. If he fucks up and gets drunk and hits somebody in the face or gets, you know, into a car wreck or whatever, like, oh, that's just some dumb individual Marine. But if you're a female Marine, like, I guess the upside is that if you break some guy's jaw and look like a badass, people have a better opinion of female Marines. But the downside is, like, if you fuck up, like everybody fucks up, then it's an indictment on your gender, which,
right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hillary.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Because only, you know, humans are stupid because when you're in the jungle, if you ran across a lion, male lion, you'd be terrified. Mm-hmm. But if you ran across a female lion, you'd be terrified. Gender doesn't, you're still going to get eaten.
Yeah.
So when it comes to human beings, we seem to forget that that's a female lion. A lion is a lion. You're still going to get eaten.
I guess one of the things that does kind of have to cross gender lines is that, like, you have to be violent to earn respect in that sort of world. If you want to be a Marine infantry man or infantry woman, you have to be willing to beat the shit out of your friends because sometimes that's that world.
Yeah, like, it's a gang. Yeah. Basically, you get jumped in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's this great book by Sebastian Younger called War that's about this platoon in the Korangal Valley in Afghanistan. And one of their like rituals was whenever somebody went off on leave, when they came back, the first thing everyone else does is beat the shit out of that person, officer, NCO. And it's like, that's that world. So
got to get your mind right.
Exactly.
Even out there getting soft.
Mm-hmm.
Time to come back and realize what's really going
on. Harden the fuck up.
Yeah.
And if she, I have to think, like, if she hadn't broken that guy's jaw, it would have been worse. Like, it's good that she fucked him up because that's what it takes to earn respect.
The worst part is, though, she opens herself up for more abuse because now they speak that language. And she's got littler bones and not as much upper body strength. So I'd be interested to see how her career went.
Yeah. You do have to be, like, understanding that you're going to be taking on physical violence. Like, that's a necessary part of the job.
Even if that's not your language. Because what's interesting is women don't necessarily fight physically. They may fight mentally.
Yeah.
So you get into the military and you're forced to use your body in a way that you may have been using your mind.
Well, we're going to get into that in a little bit. But the military is a big place. Like, there's a lot of different jobs. I think if you're going to be Marine infantry, you've got to be willing to get the shit beat out of you and beat the shit out of people. If you want to be, you know, a Navy corpsman, a military, like, medic or something like that, you want to repair planes, obviously, like, I don't think the guys who are fixing F-16s are beating the shit out of each other with wrenches, but
like, the question is, then, does all assault fall under the same umbrella and sexual assault is merely the same as her punching that dude in the jaw?
I do think sexual assault is really different.
Okay.
Because I think that's a communal thing. Like, they're all drinking together and he says, okay, well, punch me in the jaw. Like, that's an invitation. Like a physical fight like that, when it's just like a friendly fight. Mm-hmm. Like, people may get really hurt and mm-hmm. usually do get really hurt, but it's like, it's consensual. Like, you know, like, okay, well, I'm going to punch you. You might punch back. Like, this could get, like, we could both break bones, but like, we want to have a fight. Like, we're drinking and this is like a thing that's communal and like a unit bonding experience. I don't think units, we sure should. We don't want units bonding over rape.
Right.
Like,
no, we don't. Yeah. We don't.
Yeah, that's not okay.
That's called prison.
That's, yeah. Well, I don't know if they, do they bond?
They bond.
Oh, Brandon, we're going to get in trouble with this one.
People got to think about these things.
Yeah. Well, our third source for today, Ashley, also ran into that whole needing to prove yourself in dumb, sometimes violent ways thing.
I spent time on a forward surgical team, which is like a really small, rapidly deploying hospital. And it's really competitive to get on because there's so few spots. And so for a medical person, it's pretty badass if you can be on a forward surgical team. I kind of went through the ringer proving my worth to stay with these guys because my hospital unit was deployed to Iraq when I arrived. So they put me on this forward surgical team because they needed an OR person and they were kind of in the loop to deploy. So they tested me. I mean, I was a kid and very unsure of myself and nervous and kind of overwhelmed with the Army. And I just wanted to impress these guys. So they made it hard on me. We played unit basketball. You know, I'm 5'5". They made me guard the 6'3" person. And they were really physical. They pushed me down. I scraped my leg. Like, I just got back up, kept going. And, you know, they would do little things around the office. They would make a lot of sexual jokes, try to see if they could break me. But I just kind of stuck with it. They gave me the affectionate nickname of Dolphin, which is a sex move. And I'm not going to go into what it means. But whenever they explained to me what it was, I turned beet red. I, like, laughed so hard I started crying. And so that was my nickname for the rest of my time on that team. It was more of, like, a brotherly vibe, I think. But that was really the only competitive thing that I encountered in my field was staying on that team and fighting for my spot and then proving it in the OR that I could back up what I learned.
All right, so as much as we want to, we we can't talk about the dolphin thing.
No, come on,
speculate.
We gotta.
We have to. That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but what could it be? Brett has a look on his face like, I'm going to have to cut the shit out of everything you guys are saying.
I know what it is.
Oh, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cutting it.
Shit! What is that?
So we're back, and we learned what the dolphin thing is, and it would not be appropriate for us to talk about it the way we talked about it, or the way anyone would talk about it. It's just, I'm a bad person.
You don't want to know what it is.
Yeah, it's the kind of sexual term for reference that, like, teenagers invent, that none of them have actually performed, because no one would actually do this thing, because it wouldn't be fun for either party.
If you're from Southern California, you'd say something like Dirty Sanchez, but if you're from Northern California, you might say dolphin. Even though the two are not the same, but one has a better vibe.
Yeah, Dirty Sanchez somehow has a better vibe than Dolphin. Like, you know Dolphin's gonna be bad. Oh, boy.
We just want to remind everybody that no dolphins were hurt in the recording of this podcast.
I don't think we can guarantee that.
We know too much.
Yeah, we know too much. Okay, all right. I think we got some stuff that we don't have to cut out now. But maybe.
Wow.
Brett is just very, very clearly not making eye contact. Just shaking his head.
Well, shame on him for knowing.
He is the one who knew. That's important for the listeners at home. Not in any way. Let's roll the next clip.
I mean, I had to be okay with sleeping in a tent full of guys. And I remember my first time out in the field with them. I just walked out of the tent one morning. All I see are just butts. Because they're just peeing outside the tent. And I had to be okay with that. I had to be okay with the dirty jokes and, you know, the sex talk, and I just made do. I didn't know any different. I saw, like, different female soldiers who were, you know, did their makeup a lot, wore, like, push-up bras to work under their uniform, had, like, full-face makeup, you know, and it's, like, 100 degrees outside. I didn't want to be that person because that's not what I thought the Army was. Like, I didn't join the Army to go to work looking pretty every day. There was a mission that I wanted to accomplish. And so to prove myself, we had these heavy tents. One tent was like 600 pounds. So we would four-man lift that tent. And I would just suck it up and do it. And loading gear and setting our hospital up and being quick, like everything that I could do, I tried to do it the best that I could to make sure that, you know, I wasn't disappointing them, I guess. Or, like, letting the team down.
That's really interesting to me because it makes me realize how perfectly primed being a teenage boy makes you for the military. Because I would, at 18, 19 years old, waking up and seeing, like, a forest of asses pissing outside of a tent. I've been on campouts and stuff. That's just, like, what happens. Like,
does it not bother you that people pull their pants all the way down to do a number one, though?
Because I mean, that part's a little weird. But, like, also, you want to get some sunshine on that. Like, it's a cold morning. Like, look, I get that. You're gonna see a forest of asses in the morning. You're camping out with a bunch of men. It's interesting to me how well she just sort of, she's clearly was weirded out by it, because that's like a new thing for an 18-year-old woman to deal with, because like you're not used to guys being gross guys around you. You do have to get used to that part. Nobody has to get used to being assaulted or harassed, but you absolutely have to be used to dirty jokes and people being naked and pissing and farting and shitting all around you, because it's like the military. It's gross.
Also, you hear the focus in her voice that, you know, when she said I didn't get into the military to be pretty, I had a mission to accomplish, which is what makes it threefold a crime, because people really are trying to do the best they possibly can do under duress in a situation that doesn't always help them. They're out in the woods and they're still trying to represent this country and learn. And then that's when they get taken advantage of. It's the worst.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any time that a person should be assaulted, obviously, but it just hurts me more to hear that this is when it goes down for these people.
Yeah, and that was for Aaron, as the one who was assaulted. Ashley was deployed to Iraq and worked in Baghdad at a medical base and never had that happen to her.
Okay.
But that is the sort of situation that Aaron was in, was out, you know, doing field maneuvers out with people in the woods and whatnot when she was assaulted. And so you're right. It is extra awful because you're trying to meet these people halfway. Like, it is extra bold to be a woman and put yourself in that sort of situation because you're so outnumbered, because it's so alien to your life experience up to that point, unless you grew up in like rural Missoula, you know. Well, Missoula's like the biggest city in that fucking state, but it's still not like, it's like a suburb of Culver City, like in size. But yeah, it is extra fucked up to think that like somebody who cares that much about representing the country and like accomplishing a mission would be attacked in like the, I mean, it is exactly where you'd expect to be attacked, but it's also exactly where you'd hope that like someone would be rewarded for going out of their comfort zone and taking risks. And so it is extra tragic, I guess, because of that. Like it's
you'd think we'd have that taken care of.
Yeah. We should be rewarded for going out of our comfort zones, for like doing things that are difficult and rough. Like that shouldn't be. And I guess that's what impresses me so much about Erin, is even after she was put in that situation, even after she was attacked, even after she dealt with this trauma in a situation that was already difficult, she kept doing it for years and, in fact, joined another branch of the military and did it again. That's fucking hardcore.
Right.
Yeah, that's like some Imperator Furiosa bullshit right there.
Yeah, I'll have that and some Chianti.
Yeah, it's badass is what it is.
Yeah.
I think it is kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of thing as far as being a woman in basic training, because it's either you don't complain and people think that you have it easier because you're not complaining, or you complain about the stuff that's not fair, that's not equal, and then everybody writes you down as a whiner. So, like, you have to deal with the risk of sexual assault, you have to deal with the bias, but you also have to deal with, like, living in a world that's literally built for the other gender. Like, they do have things that are worth complaining about that men don't have to deal with. There are ways in which it's actually harder to be a woman going through infantry school than a man. And Ashley's going to help us understand what some of those might be.
My uniform pants, they were always huge. The uniforms weren't female fitted. So, I mean, not that that is a necessity. It's not. But my pants were always huge. My gear, I notice now that they've changed the vest shoulders. They made them more narrow because females don't have as broad of shoulders. I think it was causing shoulder problems for females. And I definitely, I've had my run of shoulder issues. I think if it was stuff like that, if the heavier stuff was more geared to female bodies, if they would take that into account, I think it probably would have cut down on a lot of chronic injuries that females face in the military.
And here's Jane to give kind of her perspective on the same issue.
Right. And it's not that necessarily that they don't make it. It's that when you're ordering sizes, you're going to order what most people wear, which would be the medium or the large. So if you're not there first, maybe you're not going to get your size. And if you want a smaller size, you just have to wait for someone else to leave to turn it in. As far as like boots and stuff goes, most of that's just, they don't sell it at the store here. They never have it in stock. It's special order, stuff like that. So I know they make smaller sizes. It's just that they never have them.
What about like women have breasts and that means you wear, I mean, like that has a big impact on like the kind of shirts and jackets women wear in the normal world. I have to imagine that body armor made for a male torso does not fit ideally. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that more of an issue than it actually is in my head.
I don't think it's so much of a problem just the way it's designed. It's designed not to carry the weight on your shoulders. It's designed to really tighten up around your waist. So you could kind of make it work as best you can, but if you had the proper size, you could kind of tighten it up to make it pretty okay. But they're constantly coming out with new plate carriers. When I came in, it was a completely different setup than it is now. Worse, but different.
Yeah, and this is like a really, this is actually a serious readiness issue because there's injuries associated with this. Women in the Army are 67% more likely than men to receive a physical disability discharge for a musculoskeletal disorder. The discharge rates for musculoskeletal conditions are as high as 140 per 10,000 Army women compared to 81 per 10,000 Army men. And in general, women are just much more likely to be injured in basic training and injured in the line of duty. And some of that has to do with the fact that male and female bodies are built differently, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that the equipment is not right for them.
You know what would be dope is if we made equipment that was light enough for women to carry so that men could actually do a better job too. I mean, everybody wins if there's a lighter backpack, if we have lighter guns and lighter armament so that men can travel twice as fast as they were traveling before.
But it's also an issue of just like whether or not the equipment fits, like regardless of how light it is, because there's only so light you can make effective body armor. Mm-hmm. If it fits your body right, it's not going to cause back injuries. If you've ever had to like go on a long hike with a backpack that sucks, it's going to fuck your back up. Whereas if you're carrying the same amount of weight in something that's built right and sized properly to you, it's not going to fuck your back up. But the military sort of has a one-size-fits-all attitude, which was, you know, kind of easier when it was all men. Not super easy because you're still going to run into like men who are smaller of different body sizes who have a lot of the same complaints, like this shit isn't built for me and it hurts more. But that feels like while we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on jet planes that don't work, we could make sure the vests are sized. Like,
yeah.
That seems fair.
Or we could spend a couple bucks just to stop having to fight in the first place.
Well, let's not get crazy here, Brandon.
Right, exactly.
We're not going to stop sending soldiers into random countries. That's not going to change anytime soon. You hear what's going on in Yemen?
No.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're sending some soldiers in. It's fine. It's going to be fine. I mean, the most insane thing in terms of like blind spots the military has towards female soldiers right now, to me at least, revolves around peeing. Like girls at Burning Man and Coachella have been using those like Go Girl funnels for fucking years, but the Defense Department can't use any of its billions of dollars to issue pee funnels. So female Marines like Jane can't pee when they're on hikes. Jane does not like hikes as a result.
I hate them. I hate them. I'm not good at them. I'd rather not go on them. But that's where you have your, you know, 60 to 80 pounds on your back, and you got all kinds of gear and all kinds of straps, and just trying to have to unhook all that because every, like, I think it's every 45 minutes, you get like a 10-minute break. So in 10 minutes for me to take all my gear off, find a place to pee, and come back, that's my 10 minutes, and that's my holding chance to sit down. So I'm just going to sit down.
Not peeing and drinking less water is the adaptation Jane came up with to handle these hikes. And Ashley pointed out that women have to be adaptive to make it in the military. And sometimes adaptive means sucking up some bullshit.
Yeah, peeing was definitely, especially in the field, I just learned to pee off a Humvee tire, like to squat. And that was like my go-to. Like, I feel like when you don't have things that make your life easier, you just adapt. The military is all about adapting and overcoming. So as a female, you know, even in basic training, the female drill sergeant's kind of ingrained that females have to take care of themselves. You know, there's not, like, Army-issued tampon boxes. We always had our, like, lower ankle pockets. They told us in basic training to fill them with tampons. That way, like, you're squared away, you know, if you randomly start your period in a bad situation, like, you never have to worry. We call it our six-pack. That was, like, the code word for it.
Give them tampons.
Also, yeah, you spend millions of dollars on a tank, billions of dollars on a plane. You can't spend 12 bucks on a box of tampons.
I mean, I'm sure they can get them for a discount, too, buying in bulk. Like, give the ladies fucking tampons.
That one gets old. You get sick and tired of hearing women have to fight the feminine hygiene battle. We've evolved.
Yeah.
We should be proud of the fact that we can provide these things for free.
They put fucking Nutella in the MREs. Like, there's chocolate. Like, you get candy with your meal. Like, we should be figuring out how to make sure that the ladies have tampons before we make sure that there's candy in all the meals. Not that they shouldn't have candy. Man deserves candy. Woman deserves candy. If you're out fighting for your country, you should have your Skittles or whatever. But there should also be tampons.
Skittles and tampons.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, a little something something.
Give them to the men, too.
I feel like if you take tampons and pads away from women in the military, then none of us get toilet tissue.
Yeah, everybody's got to piss their pants.
Right.
Like, see how they like it then. That might not improve readiness.
I'd be terrified, though, if a military showed up and everybody smelled like pee.
Yeah.
That would scare me to death. I'd be like, these dudes are crazy.
They are too busy fighting to
right.
break for the bathroom. Yeah. So, yeah, as you might have guessed from that last anecdote, the military is not exactly up to date on treating basic women's health issues. And even when they are, the awkward teens who provide a lot of the care aren't necessarily good with lady patients.
It's one of those things. You would feel like the docs and the corpsmen had gotten, like, an anatomy textbook that said there be monsters when it comes to all of the female things. Like, for instance, pre-deployment, the workups. They are very attentive when it comes to, say, birth control, which is a pretty big deal for most females, right? You know, they go through each different type of birth control. But, like, say, for instance, you get the pill, or if you opt for the Depo-Provera shot, something that requires, like, a dosage. I'm not going to say you'd be lucky to get everything that you would need, but there isn't a 100% chance that you would be getting the prescriptions that you needed. Another thing is there's always, like, a nervousness with some of the corpsmen or docs overseas. Sometimes, not all of them, but sometimes, just being nervous around females in general.
I mean, I think it seems like a lot of that has to come with the fact that, like, these are really young guys, and they're young guys who, rather than, like, as soon as they graduate high school, going off to college where it's a co-ed environment and, you know, maybe you get more comfortable being in a mixed group, you know, you go into the least co-ed thing imaginable, which is, you know, the Marine Corps.
It's not just that. It's also, I know it's been covered by articles before, but that whole oppressive, oh my God, am I going to get accused of sexual assault attitude? You know what I mean? There's always that stigma, and I know I've felt it. I know many other females who have felt it. You know how, like, a room drops into silence when they enter because they don't want to offend, because they don't want to get a complaint against them. I know, I understand that, you know, most docs and corpsmen are professionals who understand the difference between that and, you know, talking about your medical issues. But when you have, a younger guy, just gets real nervous. It doesn't, it's just a complicated situation.
Aaron did point out at least one clear benefit of being a female soldier.
Segregated porta potties. That was my thing. Honestly, it was like, because you could smell the male ones a mile away because there were like 100 dudes, but there was only like 10 women. So our stuff was always clean. So that was really nice.
And just ridiculously unsurprising.
Yeah, I mean, even if there were 100 other women, it would still be cleaner than 100 dudes.
Yeah, there's nothing, like, when men are responsible for our porta potties, it's a disaster. Like, you go to co-ed sort of festivals and stuff where there's men and women, sometimes they can be kept nice, but if it's just men, it's always going to be bad.
It is the oddest thing that men feel like they have to make some sort of shit nest. I don't know why our restrooms are dirtier than women's restrooms. When you walk into a woman's restroom, you're like, it's like going from America to Canada, where you're like, isn't there supposed to be more trash and garbage around this place? How are you guys having a good time? I don't know what men are doing in the bathroom. I don't know why we feel like, yeah, tear it to shit so that it stays shit. And then if, now that it's shit, it's okay. We can always go up from here.
We can't be trusted. It's at least not with toilets. We shouldn't poop alone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's something about women where women are like, this is a natural act, let's do it quickly, quietly, get out of here like an assassination. And men, for some reason, are like, oh, God, what's happening? And then they run away from it like it's a body.
I just did something terrible. I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Right.
No time to clean. So one of the things that kind of, a story that broke very recently made it really clear that women in the military aren't any more protected from, like, you know, remember the fappening?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, if you're a woman in the Marine Corps in particular, you're not any safer from that stuff than women outside of the military. Very recently, a Facebook group called Marines United with more than 27,000 current and former Marines was shut down after the group was found sharing naked, lewd, or embarrassing photos of female Marines. Jane was not surprised by any of this because this year is not even the first time something like this has happened.
If you remember a few years ago when the first kind of big story broke about all these pages that were, I don't even remember how the story described it, just basically harassing female Marines. It's just an extension of that. I remember there was some, I think it was a congresswoman called these pages out and said, you know, this is vile, this is disgusting, we're going to shut this down. And that was just pages that were just making jokes and making fun. And it's a lot of sandwich jokes. And the thing is, that got old so long ago, but that's basically the main factor, I guess, on those pages. And then they shut them all down. And I guess maybe they charge some people, but, you know, they come back. Every time they shut them down, they come back. And so this, I didn't know about the specific page or the specific actions, but I guess I figured it was out there without knowing it. It just sounds like something that I know tons of people that would be a part of it. Like, I've been asking some of the Marines around me. I asked them today at work, you know, have you heard of this? Are you a member of this group and all this stuff? And the one guy said he didn't know what I was talking about, and the other guy said he wished he was a part of the group because it sounded like an awesome group. So I think it's just part of the culture of the kind of machoism. And then when you mix that with the anonymity of Facebook, you kind of get these pages that people feel like they can say whatever they want on.
I mean, it sounds like the people who you work with and around, you tend to feel pretty safe with. Like, this isn't something you've ever really worried about or been concerned about for yourself? Or is this sort of something that's been in the back of your mind of, like, I know there are guys like this in the Marine Corps. I know someone could be trying to snap a picture. Like, I've got to be, you know, cognizant of that as I go about my duties.
Yeah, I mean, it's something early on, when, as soon as I saw those pages, I kind of decided I wasn't going to post any pictures of myself in uniform on social media because I knew somebody would just, you know, take that picture and kind of post it on these sites with, you know, a stupid caption. But I guess as I got longer in the Marine Corps, I didn't worry about that as much because, I don't know, as long as you make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, I guess you don't have to worry about it. Like, there's one website called JTOTS, which stands for Just the Tip of the Spear. It's kind of one of the big ones that was in the news a while ago. And the phrase they have is JTOTS is always watching.
Yeah, you're going to notice a weird change in the audio quality. That's because we got disconnected partway through this call, and she came back with a slightly better connection. And then we talked about, well, first off, we acknowledge that Just the Tip of the Spear is, it's a solid gag name.
It's clever. Yeah, I'll give them that. Yeah, absolutely. But their main goal was just to harass people for if they have like a fucked up uniform or they're doing something stupid. I guess the way they would tell you that they work is that they call people out for making the Marine Corps look bad, which sounds great. But the thing is, if they see somebody who's fucked up, you know, at the PX or at the store and their uniform's all fucked up, it's not, you know, take a picture and post it on the internet. It's if you really cared, you would point it out to them and tell them to fix themselves, which is what they used to do. But now they just want to take a picture and post it online. So, I mean, the thing about that is that they'll take any picture of a female Marine and just put a stupid caption on it and put it up there. You don't even have to be fucked up to get those stupid pictures. But then it's just every time they shut it down, it pops back up and they can't charge anybody because most of the people in the groups are, you know, they're veterans. They're not in anymore. They have no power over them. So that's where it gets tough.
Yeah, so basically you just came back to high school to heckle the teacher.
Yeah, I mean, and it is a lot of high school going on. Like, why would, I guess part of it's like it seems extra bad because this is happening in the military, and it is because, like, you have to be able to trust people in the military more than I need to trust someone at the Sparrow or whatever. Also, why would it be different? Because they're the same people in the rest of the country.
Because what we're told is that they're loyal. What we're told is that one of the requirements of being in the military is that you have a fierce loyalty to country. And you would think that whenever you saw someone else in a military uniform or in a military capacity, that the loyalty would kick in. For a person who's not been in the military, such as myself, it's terrifying. You, what you want to believe is that there's a place that you could go where people really knew your name, just like Cheers. Mm-hmm. You want to believe that there's a place where you could go where people would behave because they were disciplined to behave. So to hear, as a person who funds the military with my tax dollars, that they're not even as serious their job as I am at mine is disheartening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, it would be a mistake to say that this is like most Marines, because 27,000 is a pretty small chunk of the Corps, and a lot of those guys are former. I don't know if it would be fair to say that this is endemic, but it's also fair to say that, like, it's fucked up that as a woman in the Marine Corps, or probably any branch of the military, you have to be concerned that someone's just going to snap your picture and start making fun of it. Like, you can't, like, you should be, you graduate, you get a promotion or something, you should be able to post a picture on Facebook without worrying that some, look at this dumb lady Marine, look at how shitty she looks in her uniform.
Coming from someone who should be your brother.
Yeah, and who also probably looks as goofy as you. Nobody looks, like, the whole men, women, and uniform things, like, yeah, BDUs can be sexy. Nobody looks good in Class A uniforms. They're silly. Right. You look like a cucumber. That's just the way it is. Their hats are dumb. Like, that's fine. It's old style stuff. We haven't modernized a lot of it. But, like, there's plenty of dumb looking guys in the military, and they don't have to worry about getting made fun of in the same way that a woman does if you happen to feel, or if someone feels you look silly in your Class A uniform. Like, that's messed up. So it's pretty clear after all of this, and also statistics, that women who intend to join the Marines or the Army in particular are going to deal with some harassment. That's not okay, it's just the reality. 80% of female veterans report experiencing some form of sexual harassment during their time in the service. That's just from their comrades. But if you're deployed to a place like Iraq, where sort of gender norms are significantly worse than even, you know, the worst units in the military, it's a different matter entirely. And since Ashley was deployed to Iraq in 2006, she spent a lot of time providing medical care to guys who don't think women should be allowed to spell the word stethoscope, let alone carry one. Here's what that's like.
I mean, as a female over there, I could definitely tell the men were definitely different towards the females, if that makes sense. Because there's just a lot of things, like female-wise, that I was free to do in the States that I had to think about, you know, is this going to maybe offend somebody? Like, there was, for instance, there was a pool somewhere in the green zone. I don't quite remember where it was. But they asked us to swim in our PT uniform because there were, you know, Iraqi men working there. And, I mean, it's just stuff like that. But working on men, too, like, there was a man who we were reconstructing his jaw, and he couldn't swallow, so he spit everywhere. And I was trying to be nice, you know, and wipe his face with some gauze because there's stool, like, sitting all over him. And he, like, shuddered when I went to wipe his face. It was because I was a female. And you could see the way, like, when they looked at you, the men that you were treating, they took issue with it. And, you know, there weren't a lot of females that worked in the hospital or even in the green zone itself. And if they did, I know it was at a risk to them. It was like an eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah. Like, so there was no time, nothing dedicated to talking it, to, like, educating you about that, like, before going in. It was just sort of like, you get there and then you find out, oh, yeah, no, you got to swim in your uniform because, like, the workers on site, you know, that might cause a problem.
Yeah.
That seems kind of weird to me.
Well, I kind of looked at it like we were in their country and it was better to respect their views. I think I didn't want to offend anybody when I was over there. So I tried to just do my job and, you know, I would try to do nice things for the people, you know, in the hospital. I would bring them ice cream in the middle of the night when I would work on call. I would try to do nice stuff like that because I knew it was a treat for them.
So this is something that we had some conversations about all of these podcasts kind of before I started reaching out to people. And one of the things we talked about a lot is sort of, and one of the things we've talked a lot about on this podcast right now is that, like, if you're a woman in a lot of parts of the military, you're very much entering into a man's world and you're doing more masculine work. But I think one thing that's under-talked about when we talk about women in the military is the value of femininity. Winning modern war isn't about kicking ass and taking names. Like, that's an aspect of it, but it's also about, like, making people not hate you. And I think women are better at that than men, as a general rule. I think women are better at being nice, at showing kindness. Like, that's a huge part of it. That's a huge part of not getting our soldiers attacked, is them being liked by the locals.
My first thought was maps. women read maps.
Oh, yeah, they're a shitload better at that, too, for goddamn sure. I would be feeling much
more. Yeah. Biggest part of war is knowing where you're going and what you're taking, and women are logical. They read maps.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why we got involved in so many countries. Like, we were just trying to invade the one, but then, like, somebody wound up in Yemen and started shooting missiles there. It's just nobody wanted to check, ask Saudi Arabia, like, are we in the right fucking country?
Right.
So I wanted to talk to Ashley about kind of what her motivation was for joining the military, because I think it's interesting to get her perspective as someone who didn't join wanting to kick ass and take names. Because a lot of women, especially women like our other sources who joined, you know, Army and Marine Infantry, they did want to kick ass and mm-hmm. take names. Like, that was their goal hopping into that. Ashley had a different goal, and I think it highlights what we as a country benefit from having more women in the military, or why we as a country benefit from having more women in the military.
I mean, I was a kid, you know, 9/11 happened. I was a freshman in high school, and then I joined right after high school. I don't think that I really had any formed opinions in my head. I feel like I went there definitely a kid. And when I left, there was a big change in who I was. I spent a lot of time thinking about this question, honestly. I think when you join the military, one of the things they did in basic training, they showed a lot of videos of, like, airstrikes, you know, like these terrorist, like, drone strikes or whatever. But they set the music, you know, to let the bodies hit the floor. And that's kind of how they ramp you up to be a war fighter. And when I got over there, you know, I didn't just work on our guys. I worked on, you know, the bad guys. I worked on the prisoners that were in Abu Ghraib at the time. I tried not to have bad feelings about anybody that I worked on, good or bad. And I feel like that's kind of my worldview now. Like, you can't judge a whole group of people. You know, like, you can't hate all Muslims just because a small group of them are terrorists. And the people that I met over there were great people, and they were very kind. And even though they didn't have a lot to give, we had a guy that worked in our OR. He cleaned up after cases. He would bring in, like, hot bread and, like, hot naan that his wife made at the market. And it was amazing with honey. It made me so happy. Like, he would just put them in, like, grocery bags. I mean, he didn't have a lot to give, but he still gave to us, you know? And it's small, like, things like that. Just meeting people who were really grateful reminded me that I might not have agreed with why we were over there, but I knew that I was there to help the people in the country. You know, like, we delivered a lot of babies over there. And I feel like, you know, with all the death that was happening, delivering a cute little baby into the world was like, you know, a little ray of sunshine in a shit storm.
And I feel like that's as important militarily in terms of, like, the success of the mission over there as a guy who's really good at shooting the shit out of people. Because, for one thing, if there's people out there right now looking at U.S. soldiers driving past in a Humvee, and instead of thinking, like, oh, those are those assholes that killed my cousin, they're like, oh, those are those people who delivered my cousin's baby or who helped, like, my uncle with his cleft palate. Well, that guy's probably a hell of a lot less likely to shoot. Ashley clearly didn't come into this with the same ad. Like, she didn't like those let the bodies hit the floor murdering people videos. She was instead patching up those people who were getting hit in those airstrikes, which is actually where we get to something else really interesting, which is her talking about what it's like to treat dangerous terrorists. You know, it's entirely possible, like, a lot of the guys who wound up sort of as the head officer cadre of ISIS would have gone through, back when they were first captured fighting for the earlier insurgencies, would have gone, like, right through her OR. There's a distinct chance, because of the time she was there, that she was, like, helping the caliph of the Islamic State, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, with his anal polyps or something like that. There's no way to know. Anyway, here's what it's like working on dangerous terrorists who hate you in a medical way.
I distinctly remember, like, the first time we had a patient sent over. They came accompanied with armed MPs, and we had to remove our name tapes on our scrub top. And the people that cleaned the ORs, they ghosted. They were nowhere to be found. And this guy, he was shackled to the bed, and he had, like, a big eye cover on. I mean, he couldn't see anything. And then they basically wheeled him in. I don't remember if we waited to prep him, like, while he was asleep. But, you know, like, the picture when Saddam came out of the hole, he was, like, scraggly beard. All of them kind of looked like that. They all had really thick beards. And the look that he gave me when they took his mask off in the room, it definitely, like, scared me, even though I knew that, like, he was kind of the disadvantage at that point. Somebody can give you, like, a look, and you know that they really don't like you at all. And that was, like, one of the only times I've ever experienced somebody that looked at me like, if you were not in this hospital, we were just in the middle of the city, I would kill you. I was like, all right, this guy does not like me, and I'm just going to do my job and get out of the room as fast as possible.
Because he was thinking, where's your headscarf? And yeah. You don't look me directly in my eye. I don't care what you're doing for me.
And you have a fucking job, and you shouldn't right. have a job. Like,
exactly.
You shouldn't be doing, like, you sure as hell shouldn't be working on me. Like, this is not a... Like, that's kind of better than killing that guy.
Damn right.
Yeah.
I love that. If the whole reason that we used female soldiers was so that when we landed someplace where women were disrespected, we could shove it down their throat, I'd be very interested in that.
Yeah, we blow this guy up and then a woman puts him back together and he's just like, that's just something that's in his head for the rest of his fucking life.
Yeah, and she painted your nails before she sent you home, bitch.
Asshole. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Like, you talk about psychological warfare, that's psychological war in the hell out of that son of a bitch.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we're all kind of dancing around the point that war isn't just about killing people, and it's probably never just been about killing people, but I would say it's less about killing people now than it's ever been, because we're fighting insurgencies now, and you don't win an insurgency with murder, you win it by making people not want to be insurgents anymore. And I think in that case, women like Ashley are more valuable to the military than they've ever been, like that sort of softer side, the ability to connect and give a shit, and the fact that women see the world differently is something that we need more in our forces that we deploy in places like this.
Also, women that we liberate from those oppressive, misogynistic regimes should see female soldiers doing the job.
Yeah.
It's got to be a huge morale boost to the women to see that the people who came were women.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How could that not, especially if you're living under these ISIS motherfuckers
right.
who are just the worst. Like, yeah. And then you see some lady riding in on a Humvee with a machine gun. Which is one of the great things about in northern Iraq and in Syria, like the Kurdish forces, who are the people taking the fight to ISIS, have huge units of all-female soldiers. And whenever they liberate areas, they train local women like the Yazidis, the group that ISIS was genociding. Well, they train the men and the women to fight and form, they're still segregated fighting units. But that's what that part of the world needs, is a lot more women with guns not taking shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because clearly the men don't know what the hell they're doing.
No, and so that's, like, I think a thing that's under, like, the people who see that having women in the Marine Corps is, like, an experiment, I think what they're missing out on is the fact that, well, let's let Ashley explain how she thinks femininity is an asset in a war zone.
In my time in the military, I have met a lot of amazing women, not just in the medical field, you know, but all around the military in general, and I think in my grandfather's time, women, you know, weren't really around in the military. I think now they should be seen as an asset. I feel like we could offer a different way of looking at situations and scenarios that have only been looked at in a very black and white kind of way. I feel like the military can be very aggressive at times, but I feel like what I tried to think about when I was over there was comforting people. Like, even the guys would come in and they would be terrified, like, I had a guy who, he was, like, riding in a Humvee, like, an IED went off, it blew up his foot, and he was worried about his dad being mad at him because we might have had to cut off his foot. And that was his thought before he was about to go under. And, you know, normally in the military, it's like, suck it up, drink water, drive on. Like, that's, like, your mantra. That's how you get through hard situations. But in that moment, I just, like, put my hand on his chest, and I told him everything was going to be okay. I tried to pass on moments of sensitivity in times like that because I felt that that was what was needed. And I think sometimes in the military, a gentle touch could probably go a long way, with a gentle way of looking at things versus, like, I don't know how to explain it, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, no, it does. We know that things like Abu Ghraib, you know, acts of unnecessary violence inflame, you know, a populace and create more of an insurgency, like embolden the existing exurgents, and it leads to more violence. So it makes sense to me that you can say that part of the duty of successfully bringing a war to a conclusion is ending the cycle of violence, and that requires people in the military who were there out of a sense of compassion. I mean, obviously, you always need people who are ready and willing to fuck shit up. Like, that's an important job, too. The guns aren't just for show, but you can't win a war, really win a war today, without compassion.
And if I was over there and there was, you know, one quote-unquote bad guy that I treated that I was nice to and he remembers that and can pass that on, you know, the kids that I delivered were all boys. And, like, in the back of my head, I thought when they asked about when they were born, and their moms tell them that they're born in an American-run hospital, if that one, like, moment could be a positive and change the way that they view us, kind of like a hearts and minds mentality, I feel like that's, you know, people say that, like, in a cliche kind of way, but that's kind of how I viewed interacting with the people over there. Like, I was studying an example of why not to hate Americans.
And I think it's important to note that there's actually quite a lot of data that backs up that what Ashley is saying is spot the fuck on. I'm quoting here from a 2016 Washington Post article, Four Reasons Counterinsurgency Efforts in Syria Might Not Be Effective. Using data from the Iraq war logs, we analyzed the numbers to see whether killing insurgents had any influence on the incidence of insurgent attacks. We constructed a weekly data set across 103 districts in Iraq from 2004 to 2009. The data counted how many insurgents coalition forces killed each week in each district through all types of military engagement, including direct and indirect fire incidents, bombings, or any other form of engagement where a member of the coalition was present to record the incident. We then analyzed whether the number of insurgents killed in a given week had an impact on the number of insurgent attacks across coalition forces in future weeks. The answer is yes. But it turns out that rather than reducing the insurgency's capabilities, killing fighters actually encouraged more attacks against the coalition.
Wow. That makes sense.
Yep. You'll
that
stop.
Makes sense.
More flies from shooting rockets at you with honey than with water.
Yeah. And in some cases, the reason they're shooting at you is because they need honey.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe if you give them a little bit, there's less shooting.
Yeah. I think that's the issue. And most of the time, we're looking at a war that is being that people go into because of compassion. U.S. usually intervenes because we hear that on the ground there are great atrocities. And yet when we show up, the last thing that we use is compassion. I can hear the message board in me saying when she was talking about a woman maybe being more compassionate and giving a gentle touch, there was a little bit of hair that went up on my back because I could hear some people being like, we're not more compassionate. Don't try to put us in a gender role. Women in the military aren't going to try and squeeze the enemy and tell them it's okay, or squeeze a wounded patient and tell them it's okay. They're going to do their job. I hear that. But then there's a part of me that says there is a great uniqueness to our gender and it should be exploited when it's a positive.
Well, and also men who want to join the military and don't want to fuck shit up, who want to be compassionate, who want to deliver babies, who want to like that, there should be a room for that too. Like there's plenty of men who don't like fucking shit up, but like doing other stuff the military needs.
Right.
Yeah. I think in general, beyond being a male-female issue, like what we need more of if we're going to win the wars we keep getting into, which are wars where the ultimate victory will be secured by changing the culture and changing people's attitudes, well, then we need people who give a shit about that.
Right. I was so excited to potentially have a female president because I wanted to see, would she be as hawkish as a male president? Or would she fight with the other section of your brain?
Or at least send in more Skittles and tampons along with the missiles.
Cracked Gets Personal has been produced by Robert Evans, Brett Rader, and Alex Schmidt. It was engineered and edited by Brett Rader. Next week, we're going to try and answer a really sad and surprising question. Why are cops shooting so many dogs?
I got out of my car and I spoke to the dog like you do, you know, friendly like. I said, hey, boy. And he didn't trot down the steps. He leapt off the landing and came running toward me.
For Robert Evans, I'm your host, Brandon Johnson. Thank you for listening.
Hey, I'm Brian Safi.
And I'm Erin Gibson, and our show Throwing Shade just moved to Earwolf.
We take a look at women's issues and LGBT issues and make them real stupid.
We make them real dumb. You'll be very insulted by what we have to say. And we have great guests, so come listen to us. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcasting app.
We also talk about clip-on earrings a lot, where to get a great facial.
And wigs.
And a lot of wigs.
It's everything you asked for and nothing you asked for.
All in the same package.
Earwolf. This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.